and gentlemen, let's go.
Let's go.
We ain't got no time to waste. Let's go.
Let's go.
You are now listening to Jason Anderson, and you are in the zone.
You're in the zone with Jason Anderson on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
So, with the 29th pick in the 2022 Pay the Noise NFL Mock Draft, James Anderson, the Kansas City Chiefs select who? James Anderson joining us right now on Sports Radio 810 in Kansas City. James, let's talk running backs.
Yeah, excellent stuff. James, we're up against it. We appreciate the time, my man. Fantastic insight and information. We're looking forward to talking to you down the road. Enjoy the draft.
Absolutely, man. You guys too, anytime.
All right, there he goes. James Anderson, host of The Zone Midday Sports Radio 810 in KC.
You're in the zone on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, a Tuesday edition of The Zone right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you. Josh Briscoe, Beards. We had up until 2 o'clock. We've got you for the next 4 hours. Talking some Chiefs today. We'll talk some Royals today, getting some other things as they come up throughout the show as well. Chiefs out on the practice field today. Padded practice going on. They will wrap up sometime in the 11 o'clock hour. And, of course, we will hear from the press conferences from the Chiefs today out or up in St. Joe. Todd Lebo up in St. Joe today covering training camp for us. We will talk with Todd Lebo coming up in the noon hour as well, as he is there in St. Joe. So we'll have him on, get his observations, takeaways, things he's seen from today's padded practice. Yesterday with what they call the 10-10-10, so kind of just a walkthrough. So not much to take away or glean from that. Today, a padded practice. So we will get Todd Lebo's thoughts on what he has been seeing from camp and what he saw today and there over the weekend as well. So he will join us coming up at noon. We will talk with Adam Teicher today at 1 o'clock, typically at 11 o'clock, but you know during training camp we always have to move them. So we're going to talk with Adam Teicher at 1 o'clock today, our Chiefs insider from ESPN, get his thoughts on this Chiefs team heading into preseason game number one, what he wants to see, things he might be looking for, what maybe he thinks the Chiefs are going to be looking for, what they would want to see as well. And at ESPN, they have the biggest weaknesses, the death knells for teams if this were to surface all 32 teams in the NFL. And the Chiefs, it is the cornerback position, as Adam Teicher handling those things for the Chiefs side. So the cornerback position being the biggest weakness, the biggest season-ending issue, if it were to be the problem that it seems right now. So we can get into that as well and talk about those things and just the Chiefs overall. 913-912-4810 is the text line to join the show today. 913-912-4810. Also, a couple of days away from the 100-year celebration going on at the Midland Theater. So definitely looking forward to that. Tickets given away. A lot of stuff to do over the next couple of days to make sure some more people can get out to the Midland coming up on Thursday night to check out what will be a fast-paced, fun evening of sports and entertainment and broadcasting and celebration and a lot of cool people there like Josh.
I'll be there.
Other people like Beards might be there as well. So, you know, cool people and just, you know, your average Joes like myself and Beards. So that's coming up on Thursday.
And there are multiple ways to get tickets. We'll give away a bunch more over the course of the show today, as we've been doing the last couple of weeks. But also, if you swing by Amini's on Metcalf at 11:30, we're doing a big ticket drop out there. Another one in the afternoon at Worth Harley-Davidson as well. But for while you're driving around listening to The Zone, thinking, man, I just wish I could listen to this show while actively driving to get some tickets.
That's right.
11:30 at Amini's in Overland Park. We're going to have some tickets to give away.
So that is starting at 11:30. And then you mentioned Harley-Davidson, 4 o'clock, if you're up north. Worth Harley-Davidson will be the spot for you, 4 o'clock. That is Prairie View Road at Worth Harley-Davidson at 4 o'clock. 913-912-4810, Texas. What's the dress code for Thursday? I don't know.
I think somebody said the phrase cocktail attire. So I'm planning on dressing like a shrimp.
Okay. That makes sense.
I think what I've been telling people is just don't look like a slob. Other than that, you're good.
You know, I'm going to wear like either slacks.
We have a dress code.
Well, I mean,
but everybody else, don't look like a slob.
Slacks or a nice pair of jeans and like a button-down shirt. That's like what I would wear. And so I guess you can go from there. Like, that's where I'm supposed to be a part of the show in some way, shape, or form. And on stage at some point, whether the people there like it or not. So that's what I'll probably be wearing. And then you can kind of just, you know, go off of that.
I am planning on doing a search for a new pair of pants after I'm done here today. Because right
now... So you will be wearing pants.
Yeah, I don't own any pants currently. That's why it's so important that I sit where I do on the Twitch stream. It's just because so nobody knows that I've been Winnie the Poohing it this whole time. But I'm thinking about buying a pair of pants.
Or Donald Ducking.
Yeah, either one. I like Winnie the Pooh. I don't know why that's always my go-to, but you're right. They're, you know, that's Pixar versus DreamWorks. You know, it's tomato-tomato. It's potato-potato. It's Donald Ducking or Winnie the Poohing. It's all good stuff. I'm trying to figure out if there is a difference between slacks and just sort of your general black pants. I'm guessing there is like a literal difference, but I've gotten this far in my life without ever learning it.
I mean, I think if you're like going to court, you probably choose the slacks over the nice pair of black pants.
Right, but what is the literal difference? Is it the material?
Yeah,
Is it just the price, you know?
I mean, the literal difference is obviously the material in that they are two different things. One is a pair of slacks, the other is jeans.
Well, hold on. Do jeans have to be denim?
No, they're just jeans is sort of like the material, you know?
I'll continue working on this. It's something I realized today. That
you continue working on that.
I have made it to age 27 without having to really ever understand the difference between the two, because if you wear long black pants, people are going to just generally assume, those are long black pants. He tried at least a little bit. I've never gotten in trouble for not having, you know, pleated pants.
I think a nice pair of jeans and a collared shirt or a t-shirt. Of some, I mean, I don't know. I don't care. Whatever you want to wear, whatever you're comfortable in. Like, we're not going to kick you out if you're showing up. Like, don't show up in, like, you know, flip flops, swimming trunks, and
like Mick Schaefer on a Saturday.
Yes.
Don't look like Mick Schaefer at the pool.
Don't show up tank top, swimming trunks, and flip flops. Don't do that. All right. Other than that, it's fine. 913-912-4810. So we'll give away tickets. We got the ticket drops going on as well. And
dude, jeans?
Looking forward to that.
Sorry, hard-wearing trousers made of denim or other cotton fabric for informal wear. Do jeans not have to be denim?
No. It's the fabric for the jeans. They're all different colors of jeans.
I wish I would have brought in the pair of pants.
Stonewashed jeans?
No, that makes sense. I think of there being a very specific way that those are woven, where there's that texture, you know? There's a jean texture.
Yeah,
I wish I would have brought in the pants that I'm now questioning and had you judge them. Maybe I'll bring them in tomorrow. I'll just wear them tomorrow. I'll take them off during the show. You can look at them.
Well, it's kind of like a pass-fail. Either they're jeans or not.
No, I understand. I understand that it is very simple to you.
I don't think you do.
I understand. No. I understand that it's simple to you.
You can
it has
take
not
the
yet
reservation.
Made it to me yet.
You can take the reservation, but you can't keep the reservation. And the keeping is the most important part.
I
don't think you do.
I understand that it's very simple to you. It has not yet made it into my brain to where it is also very simple to me. This is a shortcoming of my own. I want to acknowledge that.
It's an odd thing for you to have this...
weird mental block.
Odd filter.
It really is. I'm also confused by it.
Does not allow that to make sense for you. Pants versus jeans versus material. So are we seeing anything material with the Royals in the way that they're playing and the youth movement, the young guys, the younger players... my motto of just let them play, you know, for the last month or so, just let them play, let them go out there, let them play. Okay. And that seems to be the case for the most part. Vinny Pasquantino was not in the lineup on Sunday. They've got a doubleheader today. 3 o'clock is when the first game of the doubleheader gets underway. The pitchers for today so far are TBD and TBD. There are four pitchers that will start the games today. One of them is listed. Lance Lynn.
Good start.
So, yeah, hopefully it's not a good start for him today. But looking at the youth movement, this is from Sunday's game. We'll see what happens moving forward, and there's guys that are going to be moving positions. But MJ Melendez, Bobby Witt, Nick Prado, Michael Massey, Nate Eaton, without Vinny Pasquantino in the lineup, because that would give you six of the nine guys in the lineup. I know Isbell still is considered a rookie. I kind of feel like we know what Isbell is. But that would still give you seven of the nine guys in the lineup would be rookies. Throw in, like, whether it's Dozier or it's Salvi or it's Nicky Lopez, two of the three there to make up 8 and 9 in the lineup. But those five guys on Sunday, 7 of 16, 9 RBIs, 8 runs, 2 doubles, a triple, a home run, 4 walks, no strikeouts from those five guys. And you can, you know, 2 months ago, it was hard to really squint and see what the future of the Royals had been saying, like, hey, this is what it could be. This is what it could look like. Because what they thought it would look like was the roster earlier this year. Without MJ Melendez and Nick Prado and Michael Massey and Eaton, without those guys on the roster, it was what they started the season with Adalberto Mondesi at short and Bobby Witt at third and Whit Merrifield and Carlos Santana and Dozier and Taylor and Benintendi and Salvi and the rotation that they started with. That's what they viewed as, this is the team that is going to compete. This is the buildup for this season that we had been talking about for a couple of years. These are the guys. This is the group. So that obviously didn't happen. Where the skepticism comes in and it starts to fight the positivity and the excitement, which is what I lean towards. I lean towards and usually go with the excitement and the positivity of things when it comes to the local teams, just general disposition. The skepticism that I understand is there is that if they're saying, no, this is the group that's going to do it, they are 4 months removed from saying this other group was the group that was going to. Yeah. It ain't that long ago when they said this is the group that's going to do it. Merrifield gone, Carlos Santana gone, Benintendi gone. You know, it's a hold. Pasquantino up, Prado up, Massey up, Eaton up, MJ Melendez up. It's a whole lot different than what it was 4 months ago when they said, guys, we're here. We got Greinke. This is a group that's going to compete. So I understand that skepticism, but I think as opposed to a couple of months ago, you could actually see something coming together with the younger guys where it was just, hey, Whit Merrifield's going to turn it around, and Santana's a slower starter, and don't worry, Mondesi next year is going to be awesome.
Andrew Benintendi will be here forever.
Hey, Greinke is Greinke. Look what he's doing. He's got
24 years old again.
1.8 ERA. He's awesome.
That was too, you know, fun. I still enjoyed that stretch.
Singer's going to eventually get this thing figured. He'll get a changeup or not. We'll see. But it is different than a couple of months ago. And to me, it's actually a lot more exciting than a couple of months ago now, even though these are younger guys, and we don't know what they're going to look like in a year or two, have no idea what the back of the baseball card is going to be with these guys, but there's so much of the unknown that gets you excited for what the future can be. It's awesome to be in the present because 2013, 14, 15, 16 was great. When it was in the present, you knew the players, you knew what they were doing, you knew who they were, and you just wanted to go out and win games. Now it's, does MJ Melendez continue this, you know, stretch? Bobby Witt eventually becoming a more consistent player. Prado, you know, the walk-off home run and his ability to work a count and work a walk. Massey and his ability to play defense. He won a gold glove, but also hit the freaking ball, put the bat on the ball. Vinny Pasquantino continues to hit the ball hard for outs. Oddly enough, when he's hitting the ball 70 or 80 miles an hour, then it's falling in for hits. Baseball, am I right? Salvi's here for 3 more years, so you like what you see with that. You can start to piece it together. You can start to actually see when the clouds lift a little bit. Singer, you know, pitching the way that he has. Lynch, if maybe he's got, if the blister and the cut was really the issue that hurt him in the, you know, he was having a good stretch and then a bad couple of games. And then, you know, hey, he looked pretty good in out-dueling Michael Kopech. And then, you know, against the Red Sox and all of that stuff. So is he now a guy that can turn the corner? Chris Bubich, we've talked about it, that since he's been called back up, he's got a sub-4 ERA in 12 starts this year. Is he starting to figure it out to be a little more consistent, that he can be a fourth or fifth starter? I do think there's more of an optimism from me moving forward and more of a reason to watch, even with the Chiefs starting on Saturday.
This is the most interesting the Royals have been since the first week of the season. I don't even think it's close. Now, your point, because we talked about it some yesterday through the lens of like, hey, You know what didn't suck this weekend? Royals baseball.
Yeah.
Like, it was fun and interesting, and you have a walk-off in a what, 6 RBI day from MJ Melendez, and going through all of the positivity of that, as someone who has become increasingly baseball agnostic, the positivity of that was still the place that we started the baseball conversations, because I was just sort of enjoying it again. Now, I think today, the added angle of, hey, remember when this team has been an unreliable narrator at basically every turn in terms of telling us how far away they are from being interesting or contending or a playoff team or whatever? That's very fair. You should not have total blind faith that the Royals are going to properly tell you what their actual timeline is.
Right.
You shouldn't trust that they have a correct internal view of that. But you should enjoy it while it's happening. And right now, again, even with training camp in full swing, a preseason game at the end of the week, this is the most fun the Royals have been to watch since the initial shine of Greinke and Witt sort of wore off.
Yeah, absolutely. And so now moving forward, I do wonder if people will still watch. I know that they weren't watching a lot this season, especially when it was awful. And not being able to watch has been an impact there as well. But I do wonder if there will be more interest. Let's just say more interest.
Mm-hmm.
This August and September, as opposed to last year when it was like, you know, they finished like 36-36. And people were like, didn't know.
Yep.
Couldn't tell.
Yep.
I was watching the Chiefs to see what that offensive line is going to look like with the rebuilt O-line. So that's what I was looking at. Sorry. You know, this year, you've got all these guys to watch and an excitement around it that I think there's going to be more interest. I don't know how much more because the Chiefs start on Saturday.
Right.
And once you get the taste of the chocolate cake, as Andy Reid has talked about, you know, he talks about the chocolate cake being the Super Bowl, and then you want more chocolate cake. Once you get the chocolate cake on Saturday of watching the Chiefs out there playing a football game, I think there's a lot of people that is the immediate turn the page.
Yeah.
And now it is full on Chiefs season. It's one thing to talk about training camp and things that most people cannot see except for little clips here and there. We're all watching the Chiefs and Bears Saturday at noon and to see what goes on in the first possession that Mahomes will be out there, and then other guys playing and what the rookies look like and the assessment after, and then the talk Monday and on into game number 2 and 3, and then 2 weeks leading up to what the final 53-man roster will be and all the predictions and projections and things like that leading into September 11th against the Arizona Cardinals. Because we are, you know, on Saturday, it would be, I guess on Thursday, we're a month away from getting football season started. And it's been about a month, you know, since we were talking about, you know, leading into the Orlando Brown stuff. Is he going to sign and things like that? It seems like that was a long time ago, but that really wasn't a long time ago. Like sitting here, in fact, it was right before you joined the show.
Yep.
Like from the time that you joined the show to now is kind of like the time from now until the first game of the season. So we'll see, you know, it's just a simple turning of the page. Because that's been me for a long time. It's been me for a really long time. The Chiefs have done their part to get fans to do that, because early 2000s or early 2010s, late 2000s, it was not easy to do that. Then it was September. It was like, hey, college football.
But that's a battle the Royals are going to have to win eventually, right? Because they did twice.
Mm-hmm.
Two times in my lifetime, I remember Kansas City being more about baseball in the fall than football. And there have been some terrible Chiefs teams in my lifetime, too.
Yeah.
But it always becomes the turning of the page. And just as you change seasons, you know, weather-wise, you're also changing seasons with what we all care about around mm-hmm. here. And when the Royals were good enough, this became a baseball city again. That was evident at every turn to the way that people were talking about and wearing the merch of the teams through the playoff run to the parade. The Chiefs had to take a back seat. Now, it's going to be different if they try to make this happen with Patrick Mahomes and Super Bowl contention and Super Bowl pedigree, all of that, the chocolate cake, if you will. But eventually, the Royals are going to have to force themselves to be interesting enough in September and frankly, in August for us to really care about them. And if they're going to do it, it's going to be with guys like this.
I think you said Chiefs, but you meant Royals.
I meant no one cares about the Kansas City Chiefs.
That's right.
No one has ever cared about Chiefs football in the fall.
What Briscoe was saying is
I've never misspoken in my life.
The Chiefs have to prove that they are going to be interesting enough for you to watch in September and even August.
Exactly.
They have to prove that to you, and they haven't done it yet. I'm still waiting for this PM2 fella to show up, you know.
Let's see him stand in the pocket and deliver a pass. Yeah. How about that?
Sick and tired of the street ball this guy plays.
Exactly.
Enough of the street ball.
Learn an offense.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, so we'll see. A couple of texts coming in, 913-912-4810. And this is where we're at on this, which is text says, I'm more interested based on the younger guys. Yep. And I think that's a big point, is if it was still like Witten, those guys, people would turn the page.
Yeah.
This next text, when it comes to the Chiefs, says, wake me up on September 11th versus Arizona.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. Yeah.
Another text comes in and says, on Saturday, it is Chiefs season.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like all I'm more interested with the younger guys. I don't care about the Royals come, you know, preseason game number one. I don't care about preseason and training camp. I'll, you know, tell me when September 11th is here, and then I'm, you know, going to be really diving into the Chiefs. So it's just, you know, running the gamut of everything with all the different views. But the I'm more interested thing would not be here at all if it wasn't for these guys. There's credit to the front office. There's credit to the development that a Massey and a Pasquantino and a Prado turning his career around after a disastrous 2019 to where he's up with the big league club in 2022. Massey being a fourth rounder that looks like he can actually be a player. Pasquantino, 11th rounder, that looks like he can be a DH first baseman in the major leagues. And of course, MJ Melendez and Witt and those guys, can they do it with the pitching staff? Odds are no, but maybe they can, and it adds into what next year and the year after that could be if this offense can become a little more consistent. Because while the 13 runs is awesome, oh, there's going to be some games where they score zero or one or two because there's a bunch of rookies in the lineup. And there'll be some games when they're all, when they show the talent all together, like they did on Sunday, and they're putting a 13 spot on the Boston Red Sox. That's the fun part. Texas, the kids make KC baseball fun again. If only 15 could pitch.
Well, he can, though. He can. If only he would pitch.
He threw a no-hitter in high school in the playoffs in Texas against Michael Kopech, and they won the game. He could pitch.
He might need to.
I wonder how good he would be, like what he would be if he chose baseball over football.
Just starting now or from the jump?
Like in general, like if he, because he was doing baseball and football, like if he said, you know what, I'm not going to do football anymore. My dad was a baseball player. I'm a pretty good pitcher. I'm going to pursue that career and follow in my dad's footsteps.
Probably not as good as he is at football.
Obviously. Would he be like a nice reliever?
Yeah.
Would he be somewhere in the minor leagues that nobody had ever heard of?
It would just be, oh, hey, it's like, remember Patrick Mahomes who played for the Twins and Mets back in the day? His kid's in the bullpen in Omaha right now.
And people would go, no, I don't remember.
I don't really.
Pat Mahomes. And cool, is he any good? Honestly, I don't care if he's not that good. And instead, he's a superstar and the best quarterback in the world.
It worked out.
Good decision, Patrick. Good decision. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back and we will get into some Chiefs football. The depth chart is out. The unofficial depth chart, and I know there's some jokes around that. I get it. Understand it. But what did the first unofficial depth chart last year look like compared to the players in week one that made the team and who was starting and who was part of the two deep? We'll do that on the other side of the break, and then the running back conversation. I know that Josh got into that a little bit yesterday. I want to dive in a little bit more to that running back position and Eric Bieniemy because of some of the things he said on Sunday. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. More Zone next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
I want some butts at that point.
On Sports Radio 810.
Top Gun and you buzz the tower. I want some butts, okay?
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We will hear from the Chiefs coming up at about 11:15, 11:20, 11:25. We'll find out. They are in pads today, a 9:15 start. Typically padded practices might last a little bit longer, and we'll get updates from Todd Lebo out at practice once things start to wrap up. So that is going on today. NFL Network is in St. Joe, so they had some live views of training camp. And I am surprised that they allowed NFL Network to do that, because in the background, you could see, it's interesting, Clyde Edwards-Helaire took a handoff from Patrick Mahomes. So are they okay with that getting out to the public? Woo! I don't know. They also don't want Briscoe's mic on.
Listen, there's some really powerful people trying to hold down the truth. The Chiefs are trying to keep NFL Network away. Beards is trying to keep me away from the mic. I get it.
People are speaking truth to power. It's about time, man. It's about time. But yes.
Or the power in the board isn't getting to the buttons. One of the two.
No, he just didn't press it. That's
most likely.
Yes. Button.
Carpenter doesn't blame his tools. He just didn't turn it on. He was leaning back and it's like, oh, whoops. Reached up and pressed the on button. My bad.
I wish Beards' Twitter handle was just like poor Carpenter. Because then we could just he could literally then just always blame the tools and live up to his name.
913-912-4810 Texas. Chiefs season started in April with the draft.
That's kind of where I've been, legitimately. Like, yeah. I think there are probably 10 or 11 months out of the year where I care more about what the Chiefs are doing than what the Royals are doing, and I'm guessing I'm in pretty good company in Kansas City with that.
Texas, I can follow more than one team, Chiefs, Royals, Jayhawks. Love following the young guys on all three teams. It's a great time of year.
That's reasonable. That's,
yeah, absolutely.
That's a text back to a show that's not very good at multitasking, collectively.
That's right.
We each can think of one thing at a time.
Yeah, that's
it's a fair note.
Texas... anonymous hitting coach said that Pat quit baseball because he couldn't read the shift.
That makes sense.
Another text came in and said Mahomes quit baseball because he only had one pitch and then threw junk ball after that. See, the texts can come in and they're pretty good, man. I wasn't even thinking about the one-read quarterback and then he plays street ball. Relating that to baseball, so I appreciate the texters with that. 913-912-4810. All right, let's look at the Chiefs' unofficial depth chart, because we know this is how the season will go. Everything that's listed on here is what will happen. Mike Dana is going to be starting for George Karlaftis. That is just disastrous. I mean, you can't draft George Karlaftis in the first round and have Mike Dana start in front of him, so the season is already a wrap.
Over.
Done.
We've seen Patrick Mahomes hand the ball to Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Mike Dana starting. It's over, man.
Yep.
Good thing the Royals are interesting, huh?
They are so worried about their offense that they are now handing the ball off to Sky Moore as well. I mean, that's how concerned they are about anybody being able to generate anything on this team. So let's actually get into it without the sarcasm. So I know that the immediate reaction is like, okay, this is the unofficial depth chart. This is the Brad G and the PR staff putting together just random names and throwing them out there, which isn't the case. I mean, there's something to it. All right. There's obviously Orlando Brown is starting at left tackle and Joe Tooney at left guard and Creed Humphrey at center and Trey Smith and Wiley is the starting right tackle right now. No matter who is, you know, getting extra looks and things like that, Wiley is the starting right tackle. So that part you would say, okay, makes sense. Mahomes is your quarterback. Juju's a wide receiver. MVS, Mecole Hardman, Sky Moore, those guys are going to be the main wide receivers as well. Kelce, Blake Bell, Noah Gray, Jody Fortson. Okay, that all makes sense. We agree with those things, right? So when it is aligned with what we already believe, therefore, well, yeah, that was easy anyway. When it's not aligned with that, when it's a... okay, it doesn't make sense for Karlaftis to be behind Mike Dana. Okay, Leo Chenal behind Elijah Lee. I mean, are we sure that that's exactly what's, you know, going to go on? I mean, DiCaprio Boodle is right there behind McDuffie and Snead instead of like Lonnie Johnson or, you know, even Jalen Watson, who they drafted. And I know Fenton isn't necessarily there because he's on the pup, and he's listed way back behind Dandridge and Watson and Williams and Snead. He did return to practice today, though. That's good news. Yeah,
not by the depth chart, but he is. But just as a point of note, when they had Fenton back at practice,
when they released DeAndre Baker, I kind of felt like Fenton was close to getting back. Mm. I know that they signed somebody from the USFL, right, a wide receiver or something like that, because they need another wide receiver on this roster. Mm-hmm. Because they only have 15 of them out of the 90.
Maybe this will be the one that Dave Tobe really falls in love with, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's a special teams machine.
They have 31 wide receivers and defensive backs out of the 90 positions. Out of the 90 players.
Should be more. Should be half the roster.
31.
Track meet.
We're all in agreement that Juju, MVS, McColl, and Sky Moore are going to be four of the, at most, six. Most of us are on board, and I think a lot of people, certainly since Dave Tobe last talked, that Justin Watson is probably going to be on this team in some fashion, so that would be a fifth wide receiver. Do they keep four running backs? Do they keep a sixth wide receiver and three running backs? Not counting the fullback, obviously. If that's the case, then okay, there's one spot left up for grabs. If they only keep five, it's probably those four and Justin Watson. Yet there are still eight other guys in camp as wide receivers. And you know, maybe that's just the average across the league, because you need a lot of guys out there to run routes. And when you got the first team and second team and third team and you're running three different wide receivers and sometimes four, and you've got all these reps you're getting in, that it can't just be Juju and MVS and Sky Moore and McColl Hardman and whoever else and three or four other guys after that running all the reps. I get it. I understand it. But there's a lot of easier cut downs to take place with this. I went back and looked at last year's first unofficial depth chart, and then compared that to week one against the Cleveland Browns. The first unofficial depth chart listed a fullback and only two wide receivers. That was Michael Burton, and then the two wide receivers were McColl Hardman and Tyreek Hill. Against the Cleveland Browns, there was no fullback and three wide receivers. So I guess if you want to go that route, 10 of the 11 starters on the first unofficial depth chart were the starters against the Browns. If you want to go the route that, I mean, they don't really start a fullback, so are they going to go fullback, you know, as a, like this depth chart has Michael Burton starting and two wide receivers, when we know it's going to be probably three wide receivers and one running back, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of 11 of 11 in the two deep. Or in the starters with the first unofficial depth chart. On the defense, it's a little bit more interesting because only 6 of 11 on the first unofficial depth chart starters compared to week one. But 4 were injured or COVID. Turk Wharton started for Derek Nnadi. Michael Dana started for Frank Clark. Nick Bolton started for Willie Gay Jr. And Juan Thornhill started for Tyrann Mathieu. Wharton, Dana, Bolton, and Thornhill were listed as backups. Week two moving forward, it was Sorensen and Mathieu who were the starters in the first unofficial depth chart. And remember at the time, it was, why is Juan Thornhill behind Sorensen? Mm-hmm. That's not going to be the case when the season starts. Look, this is the first unofficial depth chart. It doesn't matter. Thornhill's going to be there when the season starts. Yeah, Thornhill was there only because Mathieu, he was activated, remember, like the day before from the COVID list, but they didn't play him against the Browns. So it was Thornhill and Sorensen. But after that, it was Sorensen and Mathieu. So if you take out the injuries and the COVID, it would have been 10 of 11 starters last year's first unofficial depth chart that started against the Cleveland Browns. They also went with one less cornerback. In week one, they announced three linebackers in week one. So you take a linebacker out, you put in Ben Neiman. Ben Neiman was behind Anthony Hitchens. And you take Mike Hughes out. But what about the two deep overall? Just the two deep, right? The defensive line two deep was 8 for 8. Unofficial depth chart to week one against the Browns. Injuries, if I add in the injuries, right? Mm-hmm. If I take Nnadi and Clark and Gay and Mathieu and say those guys are your starters. The linebackers, 6 for 6 on the two deep. The safeties, 3 of 4. The one switch, Armani Watts in for Devin Key. Devin Key was listed behind Tyrann Mathieu in the first unofficial depth chart. Remember, he was camp darling Devin Key. He's going to be awesome. Armani Watts made the team. Key got cut. Cornerback, 5 of 6 on the first unofficial 2-deep, made the roster. The only difference being Bo Pete Keys was listed behind Mike Hughes. DeAndre Baker made it in front of Bo Pete Keys. Add up all of those spots, and you're talking about 2, putting Watson for Devin Key and Baker in for Bo Pete Keys. So anybody with the name of Key, you were screwed last year. Sorry about that. And offensively, the O-line, top 2 in the depth chart, 10 for 10. Top 3 running backs with the top 3 running backs. Top 4 tight ends with the top 4 tight ends. The only exchange was of the top 7 wide receivers, your 6 guys that made the roster, the one player, Antonio Callaway, was listed in front of Reese Fountain. 1. The 2-deep, both offense and defense, though the first unofficial depth chart, there were 3 guys. Callaway for Reese Fountain, Armani Watts and Devin Key, Bo Pete Keys and DeAndre Baker. Now, maybe you can say, well, last year there were a lot of guys returning. There's so much more of a shakeup this year with new guys. Understandable. Absolutely. Agree with that. We'll see. But the offensive line was completely redone. And the first unofficial depth chart, 2-deep, was the 2-deep against the Browns. And that was all done. So I don't find it to be as much of a dart throw as some may just dismiss it. So I think there is something to at least look into when we see that Corey Coleman is listed as the, you know, 5th wide receiver right now. I do think there's, you know, Justin Watson being listed as like the 9th or 10th. I think that's specific wide receiver, right? When we know he's going to be on the team based on special teams. There's a pretty decent chance that's the case. And running back right now, Edwards-Helaire, McKinnon, Ronald Jones, then Derek Gore, then Pacheco. I mean, we can
laugh at it.
That's
not how I'm reading that. Just, I'm now wondering if I'm an idiot.
So you're reading it as Edwards-Helaire, McKinnon, Ronald Jones, Pacheco, then Gore.
Then Gore, then Fleet Davis. Yeah, okay. I think line 2 is spot 5 okay. and 6. So I also
think that
puts Watson higher up also. If I was just sort of scanning through again to try to figure out where my line reading on this ends up going. But
yeah, so the top 6 would be...
I think that has Watson being wide receiver... 5 or 6 with Fountain.
With Reese Fountain.
That's how I'm reading.
So that would make...
Which would, I think, make your point even more so, probably.
And so then if the top 4 are Edwards-Helaire, McKinnon, Ronald Jones, Pacheco, and then Derek Gore...
That's got to be how it is, because look at the tight ends. You know, Gray is 3, Fortson's 4, and then, you know, they're not behind Matt Bushman or Jordan Franks.
Under, right.
Yeah.
Elijah Lee, Leo Chenal... I mean, I can see that. Absolutely,
I think that's going to hold. I think the most interesting things on here, I know Beards is going to come through here and cut me. He's going to actually turn off my mic on purpose this time so we can take a break. But I think the most interesting stuff is the places where the default is pushed back on. So places where you see younger guys ahead of veterans or guys who just got here jumping. Even like looking at the defensive end group. And Josh Kando gets instantly jumped by Carlos Dunlap. Now, he's a vet, but he's new to the team.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Lonnie Johnson behind DiCaprio Boodle, to your point, that's a guy that's been here versus a guy that's coming in to try to earn a spot.
Mm-hmm.
You find some little spots where you can look through and say, like, oh, okay, it's kind of interesting that Nick Allegretti is holding this guard spot. That's worth noting. That Leo Chenal, he's behind Elijah Lee. That makes sense. He's the rookie.
Yeah.
Lee's the veteran. I think especially whenever you don't have literally coaches making these depth charts, you're going to find mostly the veterans holding out over the rookies. But that makes it even more obvious and noteworthy when Trent McDuffie is listed as a starter. When Isaiah Pacheco is your number one kick returner over Corey Coleman.
Right.
Those parts are the ones that I look at and think, okay, Chiefs PR or whoever is comfortable saying that Brian Cook is over Zane Anderson and Devin Key, who were here last
year. And Deion Bush is over Devin Key.
Right.
Who they went out and signed, and Devin Key was the camp darling last year. And they know what they had.
Deion Bush they signed while Tyreek Hill was in the process of getting traded. You know,
exactly.
I think there are some things where you see the Chiefs being confident enough to say Brian Cook and Deion Bush are 3 and 4. We're not just giving that to the incumbent.
Yeah, but I went back and looked because I didn't know. Like, I wanted to see for myself, and I was actually shocked in the takeaway that the 2-deep on offense and the 2-deep on defense, there were 3 players. The 2-deep first unofficial versus against the Cleveland Browns. It was that close of getting it pretty much right. So we'll see moving forward what it is, but I want to talk about the running backs because I know a lot of people love Isaiah Pacheco. So we'll talk about that. Ronald Jones, who would be a $900,000 dead cap hit if they were to move on from him. I'm not saying they are, but something to talk about as well from that standpoint, and a few other things to get into. We will hear today out at training camp from Dave Tobe, Nagy, Cullen, Merritt, Blamire, and Borgonzi as well. So that'll be interesting from training camp. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back, wrap up this hour next.
You're in the zone with Jason Anderson.
Be honest, I didn't even know who Jason Anderson was.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
We'll talk some running backs on the other side of the break, and then we'll hear from a lot of the Chiefs coaches. And just another little nugget on the depth chart. Josh mentioned Pacheco as the kick returner as opposed to Corey Coleman. And I do think there's something there if you see Coleman as like the ninth or tenth receiver in line. You're probably putting a two deep out with guys you feel like starting are gonna at least be on the team. They probably feel pretty good that Pacheco in some way, shape, or form is gonna be on the team.
Good point.
Probably slim chance that Corey Coleman makes the squad. So probably not your first depth chart gonna be your starting kick returner. That would make sense. Or maybe Pacheco's just simply better. And Corey Coleman, you know, needs to catch the football more.
Dave Tobe might have written that one in himself.
Brad, erase this. Switch it up.
Switch this one up.